This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Turnover for Dallas to run, and Dinwiddie centers the break. This time he's going to reward Ty Jones! Alley-oop spectacular finish with a foul as well. He can, as I said a moment ago.
Mavs TV with a call as the Mavs do something maybe ill advised. They get a 120-101 win over the Brooklyn Nets, and the tank is not in full force. It's not in full steam ahead with the tank because, you know, players shouldn't be tanking anyway.
That's a bad Nets team, too.
It is.
It's a bad Nets team.
That's a Nets team right now that has got the fifth pick.
So here's the thing, Chop. The Nets are really bad. So what I don't want is I don't want the Mavericks confusing a victory over the Nets when AD returns, a convincing win,
yeah,
as some sort of evidence that they're now a good team. That would be similar to when Nas told Jay-Z that he thinks he's getting girls now because of his looks.
Right.
That was not the case.
No.
In the classic ether.
They just had a question.
I've never sounded whiter than when I just said it that way.
Yeah. They just had a question on Get Up. Is it too early to say the Mavs lost the trade?
Too early. Yeah.
It's not too early.
Yeah, it's too early. It's too early in the morning for this BS to ask that question. Yeah.
You lose the trade when you give up 10 years for three. That's when you lose the trade.
That's settled. This is settled. It's not just one. You've settled both, actually. You've settled both of your trades because the Quentin Grimes one you've definitively lost to.
Yeah, I mean, you could lose. The Mavs could win two titles. They still lose the trade because they gave up 10 years.
And they won't. They won't win two titles. Not with this core, anyway. No, Kyrie and Anthony Davis will not play two seasons here together. That's not going to happen.
Okay, so that would be, because next year is not. I'm not going to.
This one's a wash. This is gone.
And next year's a wash too, because he won't be back till February, January.
So that's. I mean, that's never going to happen.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be very, very difficult. But the Mavs do win in AD's return.
Yeah, and look, I mean, again, he is a really good basketball player. Anthony Davis is. Anthony Davis is the type of player that, I mean, if you would have told me they added Anthony Davis to their core, you know what? You could have even told me, Chop, they added Anthony Davis, and I might have been okay, depending on how the context of how you told me, if you told me it was a Kyrie for Anthony Davis swap. I might have been okay with that.
Yeah, I'd have been way okay with that.
The only thing that gives me a little reservation is we just know Kyrie and Luka played well together.
That's right.
And you don't want to necessarily mess with that, but AD is a great player. He is, I think, when he's healthy, slam dunk, he's probably a top 12 to 15 player in the NBA right now. And that's nothing to sneeze at. But it's not Luka, and it's not, like you said, it's not 10 to 15 years. It's cumulatively, with injuries, maybe you get 2 years worth of games out of him over the next few.
Right.
That maybe might be the rest of his career. Because his body just, he's consistently broken down throughout his career.
It has, and it did already.
I mean,
his tenure here. So he's played a game and a half now. 27 minutes last night. So not the worst night in the world. He got, 27 minutes. That's probably what I assume they were going to put him out there for, like
28 was his cap, according to Jason Kidd.
That's a very odd number. Usually you would think you would go, and why do we do that? I do the same thing with, like, my alarm.
I would imagine it's got, just in general, they've probably
always in fives.
I would assume the 28 is related to rotations that they have.
Yeah.
So they know, like, all right, we're going to have him, 8 here, Maybe we'll have them 8 here. Or just like in general, I think the way they structure it and break it up, they know.
But do you know anybody that like that leaves the house on a like they plan to leave the house on an on a, like a non five?
I wake up and do that weird times, like because I'm like, okay, 3:45. I'll either you know sleep in a couple minutes later or wake up a little earlier.
So what time's your alarm set for though?
Like today was 3:52.
That was your alarm?
That was my alarm. Yeah.
Okay.
So like I could have done 3:50, but I was like, let me sleep in like a couple more minutes, or because 3:55 would have been too long. 3:50 is too early.
So I generally my first alarm is 5, but I set 5 of them now, as we know.
Good job.
And the reason is because, so I generally do get up on the one that's like 5:02.
Okay.
I guess I could plan it for 4:58 so that I get up on 5.
Well, I was thinking like your alarm, like when you set your alarm.
Yeah,
like
5 o'clock, I'm rounded.
When you plan to leave, like I can't, like when I'm setting my leave, when I'm going to leave, oh, I'm going to leave here at 4:15. It's never 4:10. It's either 4 o'clock or 4:15 or 4:30. Like I just, for some reason,
yeah.
I just never go. I don't know. And that's the thing with the Anthony Davis time frame. Like, why 28 minutes?
Now, if I know
it's 25 or 30.
If I know it's 19 minutes away or something, I might say 4:10. If I got to be there by 4:30.
Yeah. Yeah.
I might then say it. But that's right. Just a reflection of I'm pushing things pretty late.
If you're on time, you're late.
Yeah, that's exactly
what it is. You're on time, you're late. Sean and RJ here on 105 through the fan. Luka's dad found a microphone.
Yeah, Luka's dad was given an interview. This actually comes from Euro Hoops. And I thought this was interesting because I wonder, is this an indicator that maybe Luka would not have been here permanently? Or is this just...
And this was done in Slovenian.
Yes, or, yes. So they're, we're not going to be able to play the audio. We'll just read how it's been transcribed.
I mean, I suppose we could. We could see if Peyton could figure out...
Do you want that? Do you want Peyton to try and figure out anything relating to foreign languages?
Out, that's actually, could you pick out one word?
No, there's no way.
I detected a Persian accent.
Stop. Yeah, see, exactly. Do you see what you just did there, Chop? Do you see what you've done now? No. So Luka's dad, Sasha, had spoken with a Slovenian television outlet and gave a couple different quotes. He talked about the move to Los Angeles, and he said, "We know that Luka plays better when the pressure is bigger." And he talks about all the, you know, there's star-studded event going to the Lakers games, and there's a lot of eyeballs on it, and it's a chance to perform. And he says, "Luka was born to be in Los Angeles. This city is made for him, and it fits well with his character. I believe he'll succeed here." So when you hear Sasha Doncic say something like that, does that to you say, okay, Luka was always a flight risk then here from Dallas? Or do you look at this as that's coping?
I mean, look, I don't think he was always a flight risk.
No, but I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. Do these quotes indicate he might have been one?
No.
Or is this just coping?
Yeah, I think it is, because if you go look at it, like there was no indication that he was going to leave, and even they intimated that, right, themselves.
Yeah,
like, you know, Luka and his and the team around him did. So there was no indication that he was going to leave. So I think it's coping, if that's what you.
I mean, look, Luka wanted, everything we heard was that Luka wanted to be here. And it could just be that his dad is saying he's adjusting. Like, he's going to adjust to this. He would have been fine in Dallas, but he's going to adjust to this one here. And that's one that he could be addressing it in that respect. But it also, I think, is at least worth considering, all right, was Luka maybe, even if Luka wasn't aware of it, maybe dad has an awareness. They're like, hey, I see.
Or maybe that's what his dad wanted, and he's projecting that on him.
But it could also be that his dad just sees, like, I know the way you are, and I know you would have sought that out eventually.
That's possible.
Because that's the way that he seems to talk about it. Now, I've got some great Doc Rivers insight for you, mm-hmm. Chop, that I think you're going to have eyes rolling in the back of your head. Before I do that, the fan text, the Franklin injury attorney's fan text, is blowing up with some thoughts not only on Luka, but also on Peyton Russell. 903, okay, so Pepe is a serial killer. 619, wow, I thought I was the only one. What? My alarm is at 3:32 a.m. That's from Tolo Anthony. 214, my alarm goes off at 5:40 a.m. As soon as it goes off, I get up. 972, alarm snooze typically for like 8 minutes. So everybody reacting a little bit differently there, but right there, 903, Peyton thinks that you're a killer for the way that you set your alarms.
It's a little serial killer.
Because everything's timed down in the morning. I have like 12 minutes to get to my car. you know, and leave. That's how much time I allow myself in the morning. So I wake up, and that way, you know, I'm in the bathroom getting ready and everything for, you know, a couple minutes. So it all comes out. It makes sense in my mind.
Doing something at like 32 after is very news radio-y.
News radio.
Right? It's like, yeah, coming up at 5:32.
Yeah, exactly. You're giving them that timestamp there. Some of the thoughts on the Frankel injury attorney's fan text on the Luka discussion here. 682, so much reaching, geez.
Yeah, I mean, he did just buy a $15 million house.
That's what 214 says. 214 says he just bought a house. He didn't want to leave.
He wasn't going anywhere.
469 says grade A copium there. 214, not even coping, just him assessing the situation that they're in now. So there's some of the reaction on the Frankel injury attorney's fan text. Chop, what is Doc Rivers known for?
It's
the joke you make about him all the time.
You want to blow a 3-1 series lead, you get Doc Rivers.
Anytime Doc Rivers comes up, it's like Sister Jean.
Uh-huh.
We know there's going to be a side. So it's like whenever we bring up hockey, I'm going to say Money Puck. I'm going to, you know, if there's some sort of, you guys say something about two anything, I'm going to say two whatever in the Two Chainz voice. It's just the way it is. Doc Rivers is going to blow 3-1 leads. You're gonna mention it.
That's all he does.
It's the Jeff Fisher 8-8. It's that same sort of like reliability.
Hey, he went to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but that's the same sort of reliability you expect.
God, man, I couldn't. I was living in Tennessee. I was at school, and when they went to the Super Bowl in '99, and Jeff Fisher in his stupid old Navy tech vest that he used to wear, and I hated. Oh, I hate. You know what? You know. Hacked me off the most about him was when he would do this hand sign like he's Tom Hanks and Angels and Demons doing the blade and chalice. He would do the hands for victory formation. And I was like, you SOB, and that stupid look on your face. I've got that stupid vest.
I've got something you're going to hate more than that with Jeff Fisher. I saw this on Reddit early this morning. People thought this, they were genuinely asking, is this a fake quote? There's no way Doc Rivers said this. This from Mark Spears over at ESPN. He did a Q&A with Doc Rivers, and Doc Rivers says he doesn't get enough credit for winning three games in those playoff series where he blows 3-1 leads. Quote, no one tells a real story, and I'm fine with that. It's unfair in some ways. I don't get enough credit for getting the three wins. I get credit for losing. I always say, what if we had lost to Houston in six? No one cares. One of the things that I'm proud of is we've never been swept. All the coaches have been swept in the playoffs. My teams achieve. A lot of them overachieve, and I'm very proud of that. So Doc Rivers is now turning this around to say, my teams were damn lucky to be 3-1. That's my miracle work, and you need to be grateful.
I'm sure there are some teams that never should have been up 3-1. I think the Rockets, was he with Houston when they blew it to Golden State?
I can't remember.
They're up 3-1. I can't remember. No,
He says, I got a team that was an 8 seed up 3-1. That's coaching. That's not bad coaching. I think you might agree with that. An 8 seed up 3-1, you might agree with that, Chop.
Yeah. No.
You're not going to agree with that.
I'm not going to agree with that. I don't even think he was. No, he wasn't even. That was Chris Paul.
Some of the they're getting. He's getting killed on some of this, though. The quote there that says he didn't get enough credit for blowing 3-1 leads. First comment on Reddit, which 3-1 Doc series loss are we talking about here?
This is Patrick Ewing with the, we make a lot of money, but we spend a lot too.
Yeah.
So that's why we need more.
Yeah.
That's what that is. Like, this is not a real quote. I mean, it is a real quote, but.
Oh, it is.
Doc, and look, I do think athletes in general, and, you know, Doc obviously was an athlete before he was a coach. I mean, they have to think this way. They have to think this way.
I will always. I like one of these comments here. The top rated one just says, "My brother in Christ." That's all it says. I'm like, dude, slow down. Come on, buddy. I will always have some respect for Doc Rivers because of the way he saluted Dirk, though. When he stopped down that Clippers game in Dirk's last year, Doc showed more respect to Dirk than Patrick Dumont and Nico Harrison have. When he stopped down that game in Dirk's final season in LA to give the crowd a chance to applaud Dirk and congratulate him on his career. This is two things now he said in the last year that are just absurd. The other one was when he took the Milwaukee job with Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo and said, I wouldn't wish this on anybody.
Yeah, it's like Jason Garrett saying I never finished below 500.
But that's a professional gaslighter. I wouldn't wish Giannis on anyone.
Yeah.
Why isn't anybody talking about the great coaching job I did to get up 3-1 to blow that lead?
God forbid you get Giannis. It is Sean and RJ and the Fan. Rangers opening day is on Thursday. Let's start to get you set for it, boys and girls. Rangers insider Jared Sandler joins the show coming up next on 105.3 The Fan.
His first pitch is swung on and slugged to deep left field. Down the line, deep, and it is history. On the first pitch of the game, Marcus Semien goes deep and gives the Rangers a 1-0 lead.
Eric Nadel with the call to the game you heard right here on 105 through the Fan. We are the home of the Texas Rangers.
Indeed.
Every game right here on the Fan. And, of course, we're going to have opening day festivities on Thursday. We are going to have the KNC Masterpiece out of Globe Life Field. They'll be out in center field, right? And then, of course, the game right here on the Fan. 3:05, first pitch, 2:30, pregame show.
Yes, we will. And I know we've talked about it a little bit off there. Have we figured out, are we going to do opening day anthems this year?
Like songs?
Yeah.
Sure.
Do you know
a couple one?
Do you have anything in mind?
You know, I haven't been listening to a whole lot of music lately. So I don't know anything
we
new.
We can do next year. Always, it's fine.
What's up?
We'll go next year. We can do it next year.
Oh, no. At the very least, he's doing one again.
Yeah, you're definitely doing one.
He's definitely doing one again.
What did you do last year, Peyton?
I did Back to Back by Drake.
Jonas, we're going back.
Jonas' fingers turned to dinger fingers.
I think it was Heim's fingers.
I laugh so every time I hear that. I laugh so hard. It was so good. You've got to do another one. And the year before that, you did Fergalicious, which was great.
Fergalicious.
Yeah, because it was completely offbeat. Even in post production, it somehow managed to be offbeat. Yeah. But the Peyton songs are stable. It's just a matter of if Chop and I are doing one. We got to figure that out, Chop.
Yeah, let's do one.
Okay.
Let's do one.
All right. We'll attack it then. Also, really quickly, before we dive into more Ranger stuff here, reminder everybody, I know we've mentioned all day, Keller Fire Station number one will be out there Friday for the Sean and RJ Firehouse Tour. The address, 455 Keller Smithfield Road South. So that's 455 Keller Smithfield Road South, Keller Fire Station number one, myself, RJ Choppy, Eric Chiafalo out there on Friday from 6 to 10. So come out and say hey.
I think I got it.
The song?
I think I got it.
What is it? Are you going to surprise us or do you want to tip it?
I think I might be able to do a Terror Squad.
Oh my gosh.
I think I can do it. I think I got something in the hopper.
Do the rock away. Lean back.
I think I got something in the hopper.
Yeah.
I think I got something. Oh my gosh.
I'm scared.
Oh, it's already coming together, baby.
I'm terrified now.
Oh, it's already coming together. I haven't done a hip-hop song in a while.
No, you've opted for country lately.
I've been
lately.
Going with the 90s country and the new school. I think I need to go back to my roots.
I mean, look, I'll be honest. One of the best you ever did was that I've heard going through the archives. We got to release those as special editions at some point. So, some of the old ones. One of the best you ever did was the ludicrous, the Dak, give it to me now. That was good. So it was going back to Cali. Going back to Cali was another good one. So, but yeah, we've got those in the archives hidden. So one day maybe we push them out to everybody. Who knows?
All right. So bullpen rankings. We have those for Fangraphs.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. So we did the Fangraphs positional rankings yesterday, ran through all those. Pretty decent showing by the Rangers. They had four different areas where they were top five in the major leagues, according to Fangraphs projections. And again, Fangraphs is projecting out with their model and some of their analytics how they're going to perform this season. So these are rankings based on their models that they've put out to show this. Little bit of a dicey subject here. It's the bullpen, which obviously I think probably one of the bigger questions about the offseason for the Rangers has been who's going to close ball games for you. And in general, even during the World Series year, bullpen was a little shaky at times. And you had your concerns and you had some trouble finishing games out with that bullpen. Before we get too deep into this list, Chop, would you like to place a guess as to where the Rangers land on Fangraphs projections for bullpen?
17th.
Okay. Where would you feel they need to be in order for you to feel comfortable about their playoff chances.
Okay, let me ask you a question here.
Mm-hmm.
How many starts does DeGrom have?
Okay, so you can make up to 32, 33 roughly?
Ish.
Let's say he has 20.
20, all right. And then the rest of the staff is relatively healthy?
Yeah. We'll say everybody generally starts within 5 games of their max.
Okay. Then I would think the bullpen needs to be, I would say, around 14th.
You want a 12th. Top half of the league,
yeah,
bullpen. Okay, all right. Well, then let's run down this list really quickly, see how long it takes to get to the Rangers. Number one bullpen in Major League Baseball, according to these projections from Fangraphs, by a wide margin. So this is bullpen wins above replacement projections by a full win share. It's the Minnesota Twins over the Baltimore Orioles. And then it's pretty level tight throughout the rest of the league for like the next 10 standings, but Minnesota way up near the top. You get down, number two, the Orioles, three, the Philadelphia Phillies, four, Dodgers, five, Yankees, six, Braves. You get seven, the Guardians, who obviously had big time relievers in recent years, eight, Mets, nine, Red Sox, 10, Diamondbacks, 11, Brewers. You said 14, 12-ish?
Yeah.
Now we're getting to 12. 12, the Texas Rangers.
It's a good spot.
So that's right in the sweet spot of where you feel like they need to be in order to be competitive this year.
Yeah, and I think that they got some guys that, you know, I liked the Garcia pickup. They got him with the trade with Nate Lowe, right?
Yeah, they have Robert Garcia and Chris Martin as the big guns really carrying the bullpen on war.
And plus, you know, Cole plays a really good.
Yeah, I mean, love them, right? Like, I mean, they generally were dogged because of the 40-year-old virgin joke. I feel like that mm-hmm. was in there for years, but
it's. I think the bullpen will be just fine.
Here,
I don't think it'll be like it was. I mean, now, listen, the bullpen in the World Series year, the bullpen did much better in the playoffs than they did the regular season.
Yes, particularly the back end of the bullpen.
Yeah, and you got to have that, right? You got to get on a little hot streak. But it's also part of a great bullpen is not being overtaxed by starters that don't go deep into games.
Oh, look at that. Bold predictions for 2025. Matt Vasgersian on MLB Network says he thinks the Rangers win over 90 games this year.
I don't think that's bold.
It's bold because that means he's banking on health.
Well, that's true.
They have the talent to do it. It's just bold to say they'll all stay healthy.
They've got
to
stay healthy. You know, for all of season, I had said, you know, the Yankees were the best team in the American League, and then I thought the Rangers were second.
Assuming health for everybody.
Mm-hmm. But we know Gerrit Cole's out for the year, and Giancarlo Stanton's out for an indefinite amount of time, and they've got other, I think the rookie of the year pitcher, Gil Heal, is out for 3 months. I don't think the Yankees are the best team in the American League. I think the Rangers now are.
Woo!
Because they have lost the health advantage.
Yeah,
the big advantage they had was they were more talented. They've lost three major players.
Those questions you have about the Rangers, those factors, we already have answers about them with the Yankees. Like, we already know they have these injury situations. Right. So
now the Rangers are two injuries away from being in the same spot and being outside the top 10, just the way it is.
Yeah, and that's
in baseball, not the American League.
Game of attrition. That's what they always say. Here's the write-up from Fangraphs on the Rangers bullpen. It says last year's Rangers bullpen struggled with walks, 10.7%. That was the fourth worst in baseball. So adding Chris Martin, who has the lowest walk rate among all relievers, minimum 300 innings since he debuted in 2014, including a 1.7% rate last year, makes sense. He lacks overt closer stuff, but he'll be a stabilizing force at the back of this bullpen. Robert Garcia had a breakout 2024 with Washington and was traded to Texas for Nathaniel Lowe during the offseason. He struck out 11 per 9 innings pitched last year and had a 2.38 fielding independent pitching. So that's just a metric that basically says, of the things you could control, what roughly should your ERA have been? So home runs, walks, strikeouts, those things. Should have been a 2.38 is basically what those numbers say. Again, Garcia doesn't have dominant closer quality stuff, but each of his pitches has gotten a little better each year as he's entered his late 20s, and he throws a ton of strikes. Mark Church has more prototypical late inning stuff, and I have a setup man grade on the rookie who briefly debuted last year. Church will bump 101 with his velocity, and he has a late-moving upper 80s slider. He showed a good changeup during last year's Arizona Fall League, too, but that pitch has tended to be less present in his repertoire. Church and Emiliano Teodoro, who has been up to 102 in the past, are two youngsters with the talent to end the season at the back of the bullpen. Veterans Jacob Webb and Sean Armstrong are reliable strike throwers with average stuff, while Hobie Milner is a classic low-slot lefty journeyman. Sounds like the makings of, to be honest, what has the potential to be a good bullpen when you lay everything out like that. The big thing they're clearly missing right now is they don't have Kirby Yates. They don't have big-time closer. Right. They don't have somebody that they trust in the ninth inning. And maybe you don't feel like, you know, a lot of people have different philosophies on things. Maybe you're one of these teams that says, we can kind of do a closer approach or just kind of figure it out and or closer by committee approach, figure it out, settle into a rhythm. Or they could be looking around at some point going, we got to trade for a closer. We need that. Or maybe say, if we feel like our starting pitching is strong enough, do we test out moving some of these guys to the bullpen and see what they have? We've all talked about lighter potentially as that. I know there was a time, Rocker seems pretty set right now on them trying to get him established as a starter. But I know when Rocker was coming out of Vanderbilt, a lot of people thought he might project eventually as a closer because of just the hard throwing, the biting slider, and just that ability to overwhelm people in those little spurts that he might be really good as a ninth.
And listen, I've never thought that, like, you know, if you draft Jack Leiter, you know, in the top five and Rocker in the top five or wherever you draft them, like, you don't want a bullpen guy. But if they become a legitimate frontline closer, I don't think that's a disappointment. Like, if Jack Leiter becomes just a bullpen guy or a fifth starter, that's a disappointment. But if he is a closer, a frontline closer, if he becomes Craig Kimbrell, Kenley Jansen, I'm not even asking him to be Hoffman or Rivera. Just become somebody like that. Joe Nathan. It's absolutely worth the pick.
Here's some of the projections, in case you're curious. Some of the ERA projections for the bullpen. Tell me if you could live with this. Chris Martin, 3.37 ERA projection. Robert Garcia, 3.46. Mark Church, 4.42. Jacob Webb, 4.26. Sean Armstrong, 4.19.
Bullpen ERAs, problem with that is you get so few innings. One bad like outing completely blows your ERA up.
But I feel like typically, I don't know about you, I've always felt uneasy when I see a closer ERA that's in the threes or higher. I need something in
the twos. I'm okay with it because, like, let's say it's in the threes, but, you know, you've got four blown saves, and those four blown saves did all your damage.
Sure.
You know, then I'm like, all right, fine. You know, it's not a big deal.
Context matters 100%.
If you got a four-something ERA and you have zero blown saves, that could be a problem because, like, it shows that you've got, like, a three-run lead all the time, and when you get in the playoffs, you're just not going to have that.
If they're healthy, if they're able to maintain their health and they're competitive like we expect them to be, I think we are going to be talking about in July, the Rangers are looking for a closer.
Yep.
Where are they going to find it?
Sean and RJ here, 105 The Fan. What is coming up next to Below the Belt?
Oh, Tom Brady is getting real about his divorce from Bill Belichick. Hear what he had to say next in Below
the Belt
on The Fan.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
At least they waited for the kids to graduate. Let's talk divorce here in Below the Belt, which is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Plano, a first-class buying experience. Are you familiar with one Tom Brady, Chop?
I've heard of him, yeah. Six-round pick, right?
Yep, greatest quarterback of all time. Basically owned Peyton Manning throughout his entire career.
Except the playoffs.
Except all the jewelry that's on his hand that weighs it down. You know, that's really the biggest thing that matters here. Tom Brady is speaking out in his weekly newsletter. Did you know that Tom Brady had a weekly newsletter?
I did not. I did not know he had a weekly newsletter.
That seems like a, you know, Tom Brady, he's trying to get a handle on everything. That feels like the kind of thing that Brady would be like, oh, we got to have a newsletter. Like, I feel like newsletters would have been really big during Brady's last time when he was consuming media.
I could think, yeah,
regularly. And now he's just jumping back into it. I like the newsletter. We have a Sean and RJ newsletter. It's very helpful to interact with you guys and get your sense. In fact, if you want to head over to the Facebook page right now, search Sean and RJ on Facebook, Sean and RJ Show. It'll pop up. And we are actually going to be doing the listener survey, the annual listener survey that we've done the last couple of years.
Very nice.
And it's been very profitable in the past for us, Chop, in terms of growing the show and making it better. Because that actually, a lot of people may not know this. Fun fact, the payload was started because of this newsletter response.
Yeah, it was.
The survey response.
That's right. We needed to give Peyton a segment, they said.
The first survey we did, everybody said, Peyton needs his own segment. Like, we got to hear more Peyton. We need more Peyton. And so Sean was like, all right, let's give him a segment. Let's do this. And so you guys see, we listen to your feedback and what you have to say. So head over to the Facebook page. I'll post the link here again in a sec. We're going to be sending out the survey here later this week. But over on Tom Brady's newsletter, he discussed his singular time becoming a free agent in 2020. This is from NFL.com. After 2 decades leading the New England Patriots dynasty, the first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback noted that after so long, he and coach Bill Belichick's goals began to diverge. He said, I was only involved in free agency once at the tail end of my career. When free agency means something very different than it does for a backup coming off a disappointing season or a young guy coming off the last year of his rookie deal. For me, it was a creeping decision that lived passively in the back of my mind for 2 to 3 years until March of 2020. Have we heard that timeline from him before? That essentially the last 3 years in New England, he had his eyes on the door.
I haven't heard that.
That's new to me.
I haven't heard that
one. He said it's passively in the back of his mind. So he wasn't actively, but he at least had an awareness of it.
I guess that's normal, right?
I suppose, but this, when he says it was a creeping decision that lived passively in the back of my mind for 2 to 3 years, that sounds like he wasn't thinking about retirement. It's like he knew eventually they would split, and he'll describe that here in a sec. He said, March of 2020, a whirlwind of a few days made me realize that a decision was coming sooner rather than later. The reality was, after 20 years together, a natural tension had developed between where Coach Belichick and I were headed in our careers and where the Patriots were moving as a franchise. It was the kind of tension that could only be resolved by some kind of split or one of us reassessing our priorities. NFL.com writes that the natural tension led to Brady signing in Tampa Bay, where he'd prove he was far from washed up, throwing for 108 touchdowns in 50 games with the Bucs and leading a cherry on the top of his career Super Bowl win in his first season in Florida. In explaining his approach to free agency, Brady said he categorized what was important to him. Quote, I asked myself, as someone headed into their 40s with school-age kids and 20 years worth of battle scars, what truly mattered to me now? What I ended up with was a list of about 20 things that I then ranked and graded on a weighted scale from 1 to 3, which we've seen him share the sheet before on Fox where he talked about the checklist with the teams, right?
Yeah.
He said the presence of skill players was a 3 in terms of importance, for example, and the Bucs graded out as a 3 because of guys like Mike Evans and Chris Godwin.
And this, 3 was the top, was the highest?
Yes, yeah. The same was true for the head coach. That was a 3 in importance, and Tampa scored a 3 with Bruce Arians. Big fan of Bruce Arians, I guess Tom Brady is.
Was he a fan of Bruce Arians because of Bruce Arians or because he felt that he could, like, Bruce was older and needed to win and he could push him around?
I think he wanted a good coach is what he wanted. Which, to be fair, Arians' reputation, fair or not, is as...
Bruce coached a lot of quarterbacks.
He has had the reputation as a quarterback whisperer.
So hang on. He was with Andrew Luck, Ben... Peyton. So,
yeah, Peyton.
Tom. Jameis.
Kurt Warner.
Yep. Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, he's absolutely... But see, I know some people have the opinion of, like, okay, were you great or were you... It, like, aren't...
Around great
Ben's
people.
Great. Peyton's great. Luck is great. You were just there for it. You were there for Brady. You didn't make them what they are.
That's, you know, like, if you notice, the first year... In Bruce Arians' system, was all of those quarterbacks' highest interception total.
Rip it. That's what he wants them to do. Just fling the ball, go after it, and that was what he ended up doing. But Arians there was one of the top parts of this equation for Tom Brady, apparently, when he selected the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He also mentions that game day weather was a 2. Practice weather was a 3. That's fascinating to me. Financial compensation was on the list, obviously, but it wasn't first. It probably wasn't even top 10, and it definitely didn't rank as a 3 in importance. In the end, I chose Tampa almost exactly 5 years ago now because, in the aggregate, it graded out higher than New England along those 20 or so dimensions. It's not much more complicated than that. So that was what he had to say about his time in free agency. But the interesting part there is the natural tension that he talks about with Bill Belichick, how he said that was going to come to a point after 20 years where they were going to be heading in different directions or looking for different things. And if that wasn't something that could be resolved, then they were going to have to split or somebody was going to have to change what their priorities were. And it sounds like in the end, just Belichick, maybe a little stubbornly, was not willing to hold on to that. My curiosity here is Brady was willing to play for three more years and competitively push forward for a Super Bowl and was still a good quarterback. Mm. What were Belichick's priorities that diverged from that? Was it just, I need a reset, I need to get younger now?
Yeah, because Bill was still trying to be, he was still trying to win games.
But Brady could win you games.
Yeah, so that's what, like, I don't think Belichick's priorities changed. I don't think Tom's priorities changed. I just think they grew tired of each other. It happens.
Yeah, I mean, but he does talk about there. He mentions.
Does anybody think that Bill, like, stopped trying to win?
No, but it does make me wonder, like, did. So they reached this point a little bit in New Orleans, whereas Breeze got older and Breeze was still a good player. The sense you got from some people that was that Sean Payton felt they needed to start new, though. Even if Breeze would be better right now than whoever they put in there, he needed to get the ball rolling. He didn't want to delay it any longer. He didn't. It's the idea of. I'd rather get rid of somebody too early than too late.
Yeah, that's common.
And so he wanted his pick of when do I approach this and when do I go after it. And so I think that's what Tom's describing here from Belichick, is that Brady wasn't ready to leave and Belichick is like, I need to take advantage of my opportunities now to go after certain players and to build this franchise. And you're kind of hanging on a little too long. I mean, we've seen some of the audio, the behind the scenes audio of these Patriots.
Yeah.
I mean, Belichick was brutal to Brady. I'm stunned Brady put up with it for as long as he did. The Patriots documentary on Apple TV, teammates talk all the time about, like, he would go after Tom.
You have to. If the other players in the team see that you'll go after the best player, a guy who's got the most Super Bowl rings of anybody in the history of the game, then he'll go after you too, and he'll have no problem with it.
But see, Jimmy's philosophy was different. Jimmy's was the other one. He said, you don't parent all your kids the same way. You don't.
No, you don't. But, like, he knew that if Tom could take it, and that if it went after Tom, he would have to go after the other guys.
Yeah, like, it would set enough of an example to everybody else.
Yeah.
And it clearly did, because they all had an impression about it. I just wonder if those same psychological tactics that then rubbed professional players the wrong way, how is that going to play at North Carolina now?
Well, you got to find the one guy. You got to find out that your best player can take it, and you got to give it to him.
Yeah, you got to. No, you're right. You're right. When you're right, you're right, Chop. I don't know what else to say. All right. Also, over at NFL.com, Judy Batista has, I think, a good write up on the teams that are in line for a turnaround next season after their signings and trades. So obviously, I think it was last year. Jacksonville or Tennessee, one of them had spent a lot of money in free agency early. I think it was Tennessee. And
they get Ridley.
Ridley, Tony Pollard. I think they made some other additions. And that clearly didn't work out. And nobody was saying, oh, that's a team that's going to turn it around, because they still had issues. So just adding isn't enough. You've got to add in the right way. And so here are some of the teams that she thinks stand out and are prepared for a turnaround. And one of these should terrify the NFL on this list if they're poised for a turnaround. Number one on this list, the Chicago Bears. She mentions that, full disclosure, they were on last year's list too, and that didn't pan out exactly the way they wanted it to, but that they've made a big reset with Ben Johnson coming in there. They've added defensive players on the defensive front with Jarrett and Adebayingo and to play opposite of Montez Sweat. So they're building there. They've replenished the offensive line, kind of overhauled that. Big culture change. So she thinks what you see there is an opportunity to really turn things around. New England.
Man, so she's not high on Chicago?
No, she's high on a Chicago turnaround in 25.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be tremendous.
She thinks they have big margins to flip their 5-12.
They get three new starters on the O-line?
Yeah.
And
they've added depth to the defensive line, too.
And a new coach.
Number two, on this list, the New England Patriots, who were 4-13 last year. They mentioned that there's going to be, in all likelihood, a nice response under Mike Vrabel returning to Foxborough.
Yeah, and what's going to happen when the Cowboys trade a third-round pick for Joe Milton?
Exactly. Kind of a rejuvenation there. They had a lot of money to spend. They used it on Milton Williams, who was a Super Bowl star, obviously, for the Eagles. Pass rushers like Harold Landry and Kalavon Chaisson. They spent big money on a corner in Carlton Davis. Drake May, obviously projecting out as a big-time starter. Positives there. We're going to skip over three because that's the scary one. Four, the Raiders.
Wait, talk scary, huh?
For the NFL, no. It is. Not specifically for Dallas, but for the NFL. Four, the Raiders at 4-13. That they make the trade for Geno Smith. Max Crosby's fully on board. Pete Carroll's in place. That's solid. The Browns at 3-14. They convinced Myles Garrett to come back. They've got backup quarterback options here. They've signed Malik Collins. You look at the way they've set things up here. They got Kenny Pickett as some depth potentially to back up with Deshaun Watson. So those are all teams that she thinks have margins to turn around. The concerning thing is that one of these teams on this list that has the biggest turnaround possibility is a 9-8 football team. It is the Cincinnati Bengals. And that is the scary thing to think about. They were 9-8 last year, and we thought they were kind of terrible. If they replenish some things like they have already, they've locked in their big players, something the Bengals never do, locked in a bunch of them for a long-term run. They're likely to play better this next season. A lot of them had down years last year. They're going to put a lot of resources in the draft into the defensive side of the ball where they struggled. That could very easily Cincinnati be a 13-14 win team next year, I think.
I like them. I think they could do damage. They lost a lot of games this year where they scored over 30 points.
If Burrow plays like he did last year and
he's healthy.
And they just get decent defense, that's a dangerous football team.
B-Lo.
B-Belt.
A 105 through the Fan. 9 o'clock hour coming up next. New food items at the ballpark. Who's the next Sam Darnold? How Bobby's the newest L.A. Dodger. It's all coming up. Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece. It's all coming up at the 9 o'clock hour. We're starting with Diamond Cavs next to the Fan.